Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey America, I'm Chad Pagano. I'm a former Army sniper, a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and an avid lifelong hunter, and you're about to experience the wild game domain from the hunt to the hearth, airing live on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. All right, let's start the show, first of all, by chastising my co-host, Mike Schwartz, who apparently has a big emergency at his place of business this morning that he has to take care of. Apparently, that's more important than doing the wild game domain today. So you're stuck with me all by myself. But I think we have a very interesting show for you today. But let's start it off with a quiz. If I said to you, what do these states have in common? Utah, Nevada, Montana, South Dakota, North Dakota, Virginia, and I believe North Carolina. What would you say? What do they all have in common? Well, I'll tell you what they have in common. They all legally allow the hunting of the majestic mute swan. You know the mute swan, that beautiful, big, majestic bird you see at Central Park or floating around in the local little lakes and ponds here in New York City. These people actually allow the hunting. So, and we're going to talk about that today and talk about where New York State fits in with this, because New York State, in finally this year, has decided, hey, maybe we should start talking about the mute swan. But the bottom line for me as a hunter is putting a lot of the history of this swan aside, they're a perfectly edible animal, more so really than the goose. No one would bat an eye at eating a goose. The mute swan's bigger than the goose, so therefore it has more meat than the goose. You know, pheasants, duck, other birds you wouldn't blink an eye at. You'd order it at your favorite restaurant, not have a problem with it. But obviously there are few animals, birds especially, loaded with as much cultural, what do we want to call it, baggage as the mute swan. You know, researching this, it was funny because there's so much material on the swan, and it's all romanticized. The swan is so romanticized throughout history. You could go back to, you know, the Bible, the writings in the Bible about the swan, and it was funny because the Bible talks about the swan being unclean, and the swan should not be eaten, which is kind of ironic, considering that in medieval times, the mute swan became the symbol of love. You know, the mute swan is the star, obviously, of Swan Lake. Everyone knows the story, The Ugly Duckling. And, you know, the swan around the world is recognized, you know, for a couple of countries. And one I could think of offhand is Denmark as the national bird. So exactly when and how swans went from unclean to symbols of love, I don't quite get. But it probably evolved over time. And, you know, one thing we know about the swan, or everyone should know about the swan, I think everyone's seen a mute swan. They're visually beautiful. They're striking. Mute swans are the largest flying birds in North America. They weigh about, they average 33 pounds. And the funny part about it is we actually hunt other swans, the tundra swan, as an example. And by comparison, the tundra swan weighs 17 pounds. So the mute swan is actually a bigger bird. And the mute swan, you know, is a European native, and we brought it over in the 19th century, and we brought it over as a beautiful creature to swim around in our lakes and look beautiful. And then, you know, I know a lot of you out there right now are saying to you, but I know a little bit about swans because I watch Disney movies or I read The Ugly Duckling, and, you know, they mate for life. And that's something, I don't know, we don't kill things that mate for life for some reason. And the thing is, they do, for the most part. But so do other birds that we hunt and no one blinks an eye at. Vultures. If I told you I was going to go kill vultures, everyone would pat me on the back and want to help me. They mate for life also. And besides that, you know, the more research I do about birds in general, but especially the mute swan, this whole mate for life thing is a little ridiculous. It's like saying humans mate for life. I mean, yeah, we kind of do, but, you know, these birds divorce as much as humans get divorced, and there's cheating, and they cheat on their life partners. I guess if a male mute swan sees a hot swan swimming around the pond, he can't control himself. He goes over. You know, it's really this fallacy that they think of mating for life the way we would when we meet that special someone and we get married. They don't process it like that. It's out of need and necessity that they stay with their other and try to reproduce. You know, and this majestic symbol of faith, beauty, and love needs to be put aside. You know, if we can't put that aside, then we're going to end up in a little bit of trouble here, which, believe it or not, New York State already says we are in a little bit of trouble, which we'll get to in a minute. The bottom line is that as of a month ago, approximately 3 weeks ago, the New York State DEC, Department of Environmental Control, which is one of the government organizations that I generally see eye to eye with on most things, has decided that the mute swan should be classified as an invasive animal all of a sudden. So, you know, these animals, I grew up and live on Long Island, New York. And these swans are numerous on Long Island and the lower Hudson Valley. But over the years, they've expanded their range. In recent years, Lake Ontario is inundated with these swans. And the DEC of New York State says the mute swans can cause a variety of problems. The first one they list I find comical in some ways, and maybe I'm being callous. But they can include aggressive behavior towards people. So can every animal on the face of the earth, I believe. And there are these tales of people actually being killed by mute swans. And I don't want to make light of it if it is true. I haven't really seen anything from reputable news sources during my search. And maybe I didn't search deep enough, so I don't want to make light of this. But apparently there is a story floating around that a full-grown male was canoeing here in New York State somewhere and stumbled upon a mute swan nest. And the male mute swan attacked the canoeist and actually killed him. I don't know. Maybe he drowned. Maybe the mute swan didn't. And my thing would be, you know, the bears of New York State are not invasive creatures, and they've been known from time to time over history to kill a human here in New York State. So if there was an unfortunate incident where this mute swan was, or a person was killed by a mute swan, I want to take it seriously. But I, you know, to list it as the DC's top reason for making this animal invasive, I find laughable, because I've been at the park with my 7-year-old, 10-year-old, 11-year-old, and there is actually a mute swan that lives there, and that mute swan has never attacked us. And my kids could be aggressive, and they were throwing bread, and they were running after the ducks and the seagulls and the mutes, and they were never attacked. There's another story about a young child, I think a 3-year-old, swimming in a pond or a lake somewhere, and a mute swan attacked the kid. And this is more likely, I mean, the kid drowned from the attack on the mute swan. I find it, you know, my first question is, and I hate to sound Republican, but where the hell was his parents? I mean, if my 3-year-old was getting attacked by a mute swan, I would jump in front of the mute swan and break its neck. And we would move on with our lives and have a story to tell forever. The danger of the mute swan can be weighed, I guess, and you could talk to the experts about that. But maybe it's because I'm a hunter. I don't fear wild animals, and I'm certainly not going to live in fear of a mute swan and their aggressive behavior. More importantly to me, and which makes a little more sense, is destruction of submerged aquatic vegetation. That's important to me because I don't understand it. Apparently, we need aquatic vegetation. It keeps the oxygen levels complete. It makes, you know, healthy in our lakes and ponds. And if the mute swans, if their numbers are getting out of hand, where they're actually destroying this aquatic vegetation, then yes, we must do some about it. The health of our lakes and ponds are very important to me. They displace other native wildlife. They affect the water quality of the ponds and lakes they lived in, based on how many they are and you know their waste, their waste system. And this is a big one too. They are potentially hazardous to aviation. If you're taking off from one of the local airports, the last thing you want is a 33-pound mute swan hitting the windshield of your airplane or getting sucked through the engines of that plane. But we have that problem with geese all the time here in the local airports, Kennedy, LaGuardia, even Newark. And I see absolutely nothing being done or no real steps being taken to take care of that problem. I think they play loud music or have these warning sirens when the planes are going to take off to try to scare the geese away. But the geese have become accustomed to all these tricks. I think now they're actually using federal employees or state employees to go shoot these geese, which I find just wasteful. If you allowed hunters to take care of the problem for you, we'd be okay. As far as the history of this animal, I get it. It's a great history, and the mute swans were originally classified as non-native, because we brought them here from Europe in the 1800s just to look at them because they were beautiful animals. They were introduced there's two stories, and one's very interesting, that they were introduced actually in Manhattan by aristocrats who brought over I read 60 mute swans and let them go in the middle of Manhattan, and that 60 were the original to the United States. Other stories say the lower Hudson Valley, they were being raised there and sold as pets, basically, for private estates throughout New York. And they would, again, just for the beauty of this wonderful, wonderful animal. The largest known release, or actually recorded release, of mute swans was in 1910, and they released, the state actually released about 500 birds into New York State, and again, because they were thought of as these beautiful, majestic animals that would make our landscape more beautiful. And when we come back from our break, which I need to take right now, I want to talk more about this kind of this history and how we let this happen, and then tie it in with how I feel about it, how we can control the number of mute swans, like we control every other wild animal in this state, and talk about some ideas about how to prepare this swan or how to cook it. I know this might be disturbing to some of you kids. Turn the radio off. Swans are beautiful animals. I get that. But let's take a short break here. You're listening to the Wild Game Domain on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Today's break music is by Peels on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surifarms.com.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Chad Pagano, and you're listening to the Wild Game Domain on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. And we're talking about the beautiful, majestic mute swan. And I'm trying to desensitize you a little bit to this bird because, you know what? I want to shoot them. And I want to eat them. And it's funny because the D.C., and I don't know if it's the current leadership of New York State that's kind of setting the tone for the D.C., but recently it seems to be their master plan for wildlife management in this state is, well, we've tried absolutely nothing, and nothing seems to be working, so we're going to get right to the end of the game and slaughter all of those invasive animals or whatever we declare invasive, when there's a proud history in New York State of hunters through the regulation of the New York State DEC controlling our wildlife in this state. You people want to live in your houses and your beautiful fancy yards, and you want the wildlife to grow around you and not invade your property and hurt the ecosystem and bother farmers. And in places where hunting is promoted and really popular within the state, there is no problem. The deer is the perfect example. The deer numbers in upstate New York, in most places where there is limited restriction on hunting, are doing great. The numbers are fine. There's no complaints. The only places in New York State where you see real problems with the deer herds are out in Easton, Long Island, where I hunt. I bow hunt from October to January. I'm out there bow hunting, trying to do my part. But you have to jump through hoops to hunt out on Long Island. First of all, if you're trying to hunt Long Island, you better know somebody. You better know someone with a big property and get permission from them, and then deal with the traffic, all the headaches of hunting on Long Island. Aside from the fact that it's very hard to find some place to hunt on Long Island, and the state's going to tell you, well, we have plenty of state properties and county properties that can be used, and town and village properties. The problem is there's a limited pool of hunters. If you want to hunt on a state land, as an example, out on Long Island, you have to either A, get a special permit, which is easy enough. I got to tell you, the New York State DC's website's pretty cool. You go on, you log in, you could actually print out your permit to use the land, to use their state land. And then you put it in your windshield and you walk into the woods and you go hunting. But first of all, it's only that permit is only good, or you have to use that permit in October. So it's easy enough. You get out there early, put it in your windshield, find a parking spot, a labeled parking spot that corresponds to a hunting area. You park your car, If you're the first one there and you have the permit in your windshield, you're good to go. The problem happens, I believe it's November 1st. And November 1st is when deer hunting really kicks into high gear everywhere in New York State, really. That's when we're starting to get into the rut of the deer. And what happens is you have to now go to a DEC, a New York State DEC checkpoint, wait in line in your car. The DEC employees that work at these checkpoints will eventually get there at some time in the morning. And for the most part, they're good. They get there pretty early, not early enough for me. And they start the process by which they check your license, they check your permit, and then they your New York State license, and then your local permit to use that property. And they issue you a placard to put in your windshield. And it says, I guess, he went and waited in line and got his spot to go hunt. And then you can pick your spot, and you go to that spot and park. Hopefully, there's no other cars parked there. What happened to me, I waited a couple hours in line, got my placard, got to my spot, and there were two cars already there. Apparently, these hunters didn't understand the system, so I couldn't park there. I had to drive back. By the time I got into the woods, it was 9 o'clock in the morning. So it's just an example of the hoops you got to jump through to hunt deer on Long Island. And a lot of guys won't do it. They just say, forget it. I'm going upstate. I'm going to acquire or get a lease, buy, get permission to hunt some property upstate New York where I could just drive up to the property, park my car, and go hunting, and no one harasses me. So Long Island, believe it or not, has a deer problem. I wonder why. It probably has something to do with the restrictions they're putting on the hunts out there. And listen, I want safety. I get it. To some areas of Long Island that are suburban, and there should be rules. And even with a modern compound bow, it could be, I guess, relatively dangerous if you got some knucklehead out there. But the truth of the matter is bow hunting is really, really safe. If they cut back on some of the restrictions to the hunters, you'd see a lot more deer taken out of Long Island, and they would control the deer herds like they control everything else. So getting back to the mute swan, I believe we should do the same thing. These animals, excuse me, are very resilient. I mean, they become sexually mature when they're about 2 years old, and they will begin, no doubt, breeding at when they're 3 years old. They'll start reproducing, and this is when they'll find their life, quote unquote, life mate. And they'll build their nest, they'll settle in, they'll get a mailbox, I think, and everything will be great. And the nesting period for these mute swans, appropriately enough, begins in March. So we're right here now, March to April. And these nests are huge. If you've ever seen them, come out to Long Island, find any pond, you'll see them. They're about 6 feet, 5 or 6 feet across, and they'll use anything. They'll use natural vegetation. They'll use bottles, paper towels, whatever junk they can find, and they'll set up these huge nests. If you see one, by the way, because they're an aggressive animal, stay away from their nest. And they'll try to find a secluded area of the water or marsh. And they'll set up these nests, and they'll lay about 6 eggs. On average, they can produce up to 11 or 12 eggs. And so you could do the math. They're very protective of these eggs. They're going to hatch. They usually hatch by June 1st. There's plenty of food. There's very little. There's very little for these to get in the way of the birth of these animals, except for man, for the most part. And you know, compounding the problem, you know, is the fact that for years they were protected by New York State. We weren't allowed to hunt them. We were still not allowed to hunt them. And so there was no checks and balances on this animal at all. And New York State is now saying, I think there's something like, I think the number's up to 2,500, I think I read, somewhere in there. You know, and that number has spooked the DEC into deciding that they want to eliminate, not control, completely eliminate the mute swans from the landscape. And they just had a public meeting about it. And there was an outcry, obviously, from non-hunters, animal lovers, who don't want to see this beautiful, majestic animal killed. And there was an outcry from hunters saying, you know, really, you're going to oil their eggs? And all the same stupid tricks that DEC tried to do with the geese, that's not working as of right now. Instead of saying, you know what? I have the hunters here to do this, and we could do this. And I'm not proposing hunting, you know, on my local pond at the local park with kids swinging. I'm talking about opening up certain times and certain areas to hunting of this animal. And there's, you know, it's a real hunt. If you hunt these animals on state lands, you're going to have a real hunt. It's going to be a competitive, you know, free-ranging animal that you're trying to try to kill. And it could be a real boom for the state as far as money, revenue. I would pay you. I would pay the state again to for the privilege of going to hunt another animal. And then, as you know, the mantra of the wild game domain is, if you kill it, you better eat it. So I started researching that. And that's a little more of a problem, because if you go Google right now, swan recipes, there's very few out there. And from what I've never killed one, and I've never consumed one, but we're going to assume, according to what I've read and talking to other hunters, I have one friend who's actually gone on a mute swan hunt, and he shot three swans, and he tried making a swan soup, he tried roasting one, and it was both a disaster. And then he finally said to me, you know what I did with the last one? I made burgers. I made swan burgers out of it. Apparently the swan, and I guess it depends on what environment the swan's from, is very gamey. It's a very gamey animal, more so than most wild ducks and wild geese. And he made an interesting point that, and I kept comparing the swan based on the size of it to a goose. And I said, oh, so I would treat it as a goose. And he said, no, you can't really. It's totally different. It's closer to a duck as far as texture, color, meatiness, you know, texture of the meat. And dealing with Long Island ducks, I have a decent amount of experience with. I decided, you know, maybe we should make burgers out of these swans. That would be good. And he had told me he eventually, what he had done, he had removed the breast, and he had actually brined salt water solution, a water and salt solution to hydrate the breast of the swan. And then he ended up grinding it, and he added some rosemary, some sage. He used an egg because there's not a lot of fat there. There's not a lot of binder in the breast of a swan. So he used an egg in about, I think he said one egg to about a pound of meat. He tightened it all up with some breadcrumbs, salt and pepper, put it on his grill, and he said it was delicious. There was a certain amount of gaminess that came through, but there was a moisture level from the brining solution. You know, and I'm sure some of you better chefs out there, even you home chefs, you could certainly do a lot with this animal. I know for a fact there are needy families that if a hunter wanted to hunt them, he could at least give it away. We could set up a pantry. We do a venison donation program. Why couldn't we do a swan donation program? So my thing is, I want New York State to stop taking these drastic steps in the elimination of invasive species. They did the same thing a couple of weeks ago with feral hogs. Until then, feral hogs were a free game. Kill them when you see them. Now New York's saying that the hunters can't possibly control the feral hog population, and we shouldn't kill them, that they're going to trap them and take care of it. Well, I'm here to tell you, it's going to be a problem soon enough, because if the hunters aren't allowed to kill them, the traps and the games that the DEC is going to try to, they just don't have the manpower, the money to invest in getting rid of these invasive species. Try to control the numbers through the hunters. And that's the best advice I could really, really give the state. And we need your help. You could contact the DEC. It's not too late. They haven't decided ultimately what to do here. So we could contact the DEC, and give them your opinion. And they actually listened. They just did a public hearing on it, and a lot of people were against it, so they backtracked a little bit, and they're trying to formulate a better plan. But my opinion is let the hunters do it. Let the hunters take care of it. Well, I hope I demystified this beautiful, majestic animal that I want to eat to the listening public. It could be a very nice source of protein for our families, and it could bring in much-needed revenue to the state if they handled the problem properly and let the hunters take care of it. Unfortunately, believe it or not, that was a half hour about a swan. I can't believe where the time goes. That's all the time we have. Thank you for listening today. And you can check out old episodes of the Wild Game Domain on heritageradio.org. Thank you for joining us, and I'll talk to you guys next week, and hopefully my co-host will be back. And I'd like to thank, I almost forgot, Evan, my man Evan, for producing and engineering today's show. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Goodbye, America.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.